to first acknowledge my co-authors and co-researchers on this project, Dr. Lynn Sorcely and Deborah Tolman, who are also at San Francisco State with me, as well as Rogerio Pinto, who's at the School of Social Work at Columbia University. And what I'm going to do today is first give an overview of HIV among Latinos in the U.S. and establish a difference between Latinos and non-Latino adolescents with regard to sexual behaviors and gender attitudes, and then examine the effects of immigration and acculturation in those differences. So, Latinos make up 13% of the U.S. population, and as many of you heard, this is going to increase dramatically. So by 2020, it's estimated to double to 70 million, or 21% of the U.S. The number of Latinos in the U.S. today is bigger than the population of Canada, which is, I think, very interesting. And if you were to only look at Latinos in the U.S., the U.S. would constitute the fifth largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. The Pew Hispanic Center estimates that there are 11 million undocumented individuals in the U.S., most of those coming from Latin America, 6 million from Mexico, and 2.5 million from other Latin American countries. And I just want to mention here briefly the diversity of Latinos in the U.S. I do that because for the rest of the presentation, I basically refer to Latinos as a monolithic group. But there's an incredible amount of diversity, not only in terms of country of origin, but also in terms of language, racial, ethnic identities, and educational backgrounds. Latinos are a very young population in the United States. So if you look at the median age for the entire U.S., it's 35.3, and the median age for Latinos in the U.S. is about 10 years younger, 25.9. And Latinos accounted for half of the population growth in the U.S. in 2005, and about half of that was through migration, and the other half was through birth. So Latinos make up 13% of the U.S. population, however, they account for 18% of those infected with HIV. Among Latinos, for men, most are infected through sex with men, followed closely by drug use and heterosexual sex. For women, most women are infected through heterosexual sex, so about 73% of Latinas are infected through having sex with men. And one in four of all HIV infections among Latinos is among women. For adolescents, Latinos aged 13 to 19 are 16% of U.S. adolescents, yet they account for 21% of new HIV cases in 2003. And if you just look at Latino adolescents, they're five times more likely than white adolescents to become infected. Latino adolescents research has shown that they're also less likely to use condoms than either African-American or white counterparts. And heterosexual sex was the major mode of HIV transmission among Latino adolescents. And while in general we've seen a decrease in pregnancy and early intercourse, the decrease has not been shown in Latino adolescents. Now, the rates of HIV among Latinos are really only part of the story. There's huge amounts of limitations that will prevent many Latinos from knowing that they're infected. Of course, there's immigration status and documentation, and there's a real cycle in terms of the crackdown on illegal immigrants. So there's several cities in California that are now using their police force to enforce federal law around immigration. And what that does is it creates an environment of fear where many undocumented individuals will not go seek health care because they're unsure or scared that they might be turned in if they don't have proper documentation. Of course, the confusing healthcare system is confusing for everybody. Even for those of us who have very good insurances, I can imagine negotiating the healthcare system without the proper language unfortunately, a lot of places do not speak Spanish. There's also a very low perception of HIV risk on the part of both providers and clients. And there's also, of course, lack of money to pay for services and a very difficult time accessing services. Many Latinos live and work in very rural areas, and it's difficult to take 2 or 4 hours to go seek health care and get tested for HIV. And along with that are, of course, family obligations. Many Latinos may also wait to do preventative care in their home country and only seek urgent care in the U.S. Acculturation refers to the complex set of phenomena resulting from continuous contact between groups of individuals from different cultures. And there's many different terms that are used for acculturation, and I like this one because it has a give and take. And the other terms used for acculturation are biculturalism or assimilation. And it's measured in a variety of different ways, including nativity status, your ethnic identity, immigration, length of time in the U.S., language proficiency, and language preference. And you would think, considering the limitations that Latinos face with healthcare, that if you saw an increase, especially in terms of language proficiency, that you would see a decrease in terms of health access, because you would see a decrease, obviously, in language barriers, perhaps immigration, perhaps you would have more money. And what you actually see is, you know, the acculturation paradox, where increase in acculturation actually leads to increase in substance use, unsafe sex, and mental health issues. What I'm interested in is the intersection between acculturation and gender. So whereas you would think acculturation would increase risk factors, what I'm interested in is if gender is actually a backdoor for a lot of risk factors. So if you have an increase in acculturation, you would think that you would also decrease attitudes relating to traditional gender norms. And if you do have a decrease in traditional gender norms, how does that influence the sexual health of women? And I think this brings up an interesting question when it comes to, quote, acculturation and what happens to Latino immigrants when they come to the U.S. with what is getting picked up in terms of the gender norms. So what is the kind of mere reflection of the U.S. dominant culture with regard to gender norms? So my study is a secondary analysis of data collected from Deb Tolman's television consumption and adolescent sexual activity. Data were collected in 2001 with 847 adolescents, more or less half and half women and men, grades 8 to 10, and they were recruited from 2 suburban schools in the Northeast. And participants mainly identified as white, 64%, and then Latino, 21%. Black and Asian were each 4% each, and there were 9% of participants who identified as bi or multiracial. And my research questions revolved around how do Latino adolescents compare to non-Latino adolescents with regard to sexual health, and what are the attitudes towards gender roles, and then limiting the analyses to Latinos, does immigration explain the differences and does acculturation explain differences? There were 178 Latino participants. 48% were not born in the U.S., and I'm including Puerto Rico here as outside the U.S. Most were born in either Puerto Rico or Dominican Republic, with some born in Brazil. 67% reported Spanish as their first language, and a third had had intercourse. And my analyses were very simple, t-test, or chi-square comparing to the two groups, followed by linear or logistic regression, examining immigration and acculturation. So this is a table that shows all Latinos compared to all non-Latinos. So the categories include both boys and girls. And you can see that the main differences lie with having had intercourse. 33% of Latinos versus 19% of non-Latinos had intercourse. Latinos were slightly less likely to have used any kind of protection, so that includes the birth control pill as well as condom use. For condom use, it's 2.34 versus 2.60, and that's only marginally significant. Slightly higher number of sexual partners and a slightly lower age at first intercourse. The age of current partner is slightly higher for Latinos compared to non-Latinos, and both show some fear of getting AIDS or just of AIDS. So this is the table comparing just the girls, the Latina girls to the non-Latina girls, and the differences with the overall group are highlighted in yellow. And the main thing I want to show you with this table is the difference of age of partner at first intercourse, which is well over a year older for Latina girls than non-Latina girls. When you look at just the boys, again, the yellow highlights the differences between the entire group with just the boys. You see that the age of partner at first intercourse is a year younger than non-Latinos, and also that there is no difference in terms of age of current partner, which is different from the bigger sample. When you look at just Latinos, so this is looking at just Latinos and comparing immigrant to non-immigrant, you see that there are very few differences. The main difference, which is only marginally significant, is among immigrant girls who have an older partner, and that's the beta 2.07. And here, this is looking at the same variables, just highlighting acculturation. And we had a five question acculturation scale that was basically a language preference scale. And this is comparing highly acculturated Latinos to non-highly acculturated Latinos. And the main difference here is really in the having had sex at all, where you see that among acculturated girls, they're more likely to have had sex, and among acculturated boys, they're less likely to have had sex. However, if you go down to the number of sexual partners, the highly acculturated boys tended to have many more partners than the non-highly acculturated boys. So what really we're looking at here is the sexual behavior, and I wanted to talk just briefly about some of the gender role variables. And we have several, I'm only going to talk about two. This is the masculinity ideology scale, which is 12 items, and it has questions such as, it's embarrassing for a guy when he needs to ask help. And this is just comparing Latina girls to non-Latina girls, and you see that there's a significant difference, although the numbers aren't so far off. When I did these analyses controlling for immigration and acculturation, there's absolutely no difference. And this is another scale, which is the coercion endorsement scale, and it's 13 items, and it has questions such as, a guy can't be held responsible for things he says or does when he's really angry. And you see that when you compare Latinos to non-Latinos, girls and boys, that there are significant differences across the board. Again, when you run these same analyses controlling for immigration and acculturation, there's no difference. So really, it really, for me, brings up a lot more questions in terms of how does immigration and acculturation play a role in terms of sexual health for Latino adolescents. And unfortunately, I feel that my analysis brought up more questions for me than it did answers. I just wanted to acknowledge the minority supplement from Deb Tolman that sponsored these analyses. Thank you.
Okay, thanks to all our panelists. For those who came in late, I just want to thank again the sponsorship of the Sexuality Task Force of the Section on Population, Family Planning, Reproductive Health. And to send this around again, as Rita said, we are hoping to do something like this next year. If you might be interested in presenting, put your name and contact on here. So we have time for a few questions, comments, discussion on the panel. Anybody? speak up, please. Other questions, comments? Anna? Thank you.
directed to any of the panelists, right? Anybody want to take that one?
Do you have other thoughts, Tim? I'm not sure that learning about immigrant sexual health and risk is going to help that discussion.
Over there. That's a great question. For myself, no. Anybody else? Rita, Miguel? Sounds like you have a good idea to develop there.
You might want to look into the work of Portes, and I did come across some work that spoke about the protective mechanisms of parents and the community, the close-knit community at home, similar to, I think, what, is it Rita or John? Oh, what's his name? Basically, that in our immigrant communities, because it's such a tight-knit community, that you do have a lot of parental influence, a lot of community members who are actually watching, you know, kids, so they actually might be a little bit more fearful. So someone could, you know, perhaps perceive that as social capital and how that might impact sexual health.
Thank you.
that's a great point. And in terms of social capital, there's more written about educational attainment than health. But there is some stuff out there. But that's a great point. Thanks for bringing that up.
Last question.
Right, it's a perfect bullet, but unfortunately we have to present the good with the bad. But it's not only persons coming across the border, say Mexicans, but it's like a lot of women from the Caribbean as well also fly up here. They might go to Miami to deliver their babies. They don't necessarily stay here, but they go back home, but then their kids, you know, reap the benefits. But it's just one, you know, item in the, you know, plethora of the good and the bad. But your point is well taken. I guess the best thing I can say is that someone that would come for employment opportunities, people might be more opposed to those people because they might see them as an immediate risk to their own financial security. But say, for instance, the women who are coming to have babies, a lot of them leave. So the impact would not be seen until 18, 20 years, until the kids come back